Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, and Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine. Damn, we could have had her out of there. Evidently, they introduced a legislation to, what they're calling bipartisan, to recognize November 2020 as National Homeless Children and Youth Awareness Month. This is the second time they've done both the child and the youth homelessness together as a month. I guess we're cutting down on that. This is the second time that it's been recognized in a congressional resolution. The resolution, they say, supports the efforts of businesses, organizations, educators, and volunteers to meet the needs of homeless children and youth, and encourages these efforts to be intensified. Now, granted, the Senate left, took their break out of town, didn't pass any real substantive legislation to help these homeless kids. No, we got some very fine words, the best words. But that's it, just words. And here to share some thoughts on the National Homeless Children and Youth Awareness Month, I've asked our good friend Pat LaMarche to come talk with us, who is a author, authored my book, also one of the great homelessness awareness advocates that I know. Pat, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Wonderful to talk to you, Rick.
So we've got a resolution. Bipartisan. We want to praise the people who are doing work on homelessness, and especially for kids.
Yeah, neither one of those two ever vote for anything that would actually help, like raising the minimum wage or providing more money to HUD for subsidized housing, expanding Section 8, building affordable housing and workforce housing in places where, you know, the workers can't afford to live. Those two, there's the irony of it. If Lieberman had snuck his way back into the Senate just so he could help, that would have been the perfect trifecta.
No, and the thing that gets me is, you know, we pass these nice resolutions. You know, they've got nice flowery words, or to use a Trump frame, the very fine words, the best words, and they don't do anything. I mean, we've been doing this since 2007, and you're the expert here. Have things gotten better?
No, things have just gotten much worse. And when the evictions, most of the states have passed moratoriums because of the pandemic that will expire about the same time the unemployment benefits expire. And then we're just going to have this giant, enormous wave. I can't use the word tsunami because it's actually been over. How you can overuse the word tsunami is beyond me. But we're just going to have this crushing reality of homelessness. And, you know, most housing programs that benefit the poor, the money never goes to the poor. It's a pass-through to the landlord.
Right.
So it's still just money in the pockets of the middle class and higher. So why you can't get these leaders to do that? There are things that they have had before them that they could actually pass. I think I was just trying to look. Senate proposal SB 1218. Would change the definition of homelessness. So there are two agencies that talk about homelessness. One is the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, run by Ben Carson, who tried to buy a desk that would have provided subsidized housing to about five families for the same price for a whole year. And then the Department of Education. It is not under Health and Human Services, which is probably where it should be, because Health and Human Services talks about health and human services.
Right.
But the Department of Education has a definition for homelessness that is actually quite accurate. HUD has the definition that's built to make sure that the number is as small as humanly possible. So this SB in 2019, it was called SB 2018. It's been brought forward for 20 years. It's not a new resolution, not a new bill. It's just that no Congress, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, will ever pass it, for some stupid reason. And what it says is the HUD definition would match the Department of Education definition. So if you are living with mom's weird new boyfriend, Bill, who might actually think you're more attractive than mom and therefore lets the family move in for who knows what nefarious reasons, In HUD's way of looking at things, you're not homeless anymore.
Right.
You might be living with a pedophile. You might be living with someone who's going to beat your mother and you can't leave because you have nowhere to go. But in the Department of Education, that tenuous living situation is still considered homelessness. HUD does not consider it. If a church or an agency provides you with a hotel room for the night because your house burnt down, you're homeless. If you can afford the same hotel room on your shitty little, crappy little waitress wage, then you're not homeless. Same exact hotel room. But if it's not a church paying for it and it's just you paying for it, then you're not homeless. You would be considered homeless from the Department of Education.
Right.
So if we could just expand that definition to an appropriate definition, then we would actually have a number. Right now, Housing and Urban Development says about 500,000 people are homeless. And the Department of Ed says 1.4 million school children are homeless.
So that's a huge gap. I mean, that's an enormous gap.
Yeah. So the Department of Ed has identified three times as many homeless school children as HUD has identified all people, grandpas, babies. So if we extrapolate the number out properly, it's probably about 10 million homeless people right now in the United States, which is about 3% of the population, which makes sense. That makes absolute sense that 3% of the population has nowhere to go.
And we're heading into a moment where, because of this pandemic, because of Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans' failure to move any legislation to help people to stay in their homes, we're going to be seeing a lot more people kicked to the curb, foreclosed on, and their mortgages are evicted from places that they rent. Thus, I would argue, probably making that 3% number much higher.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you and I have had this conversation before, but I have never run a shelter that had a union person living in. People who work and have a union job have a living wage and a safety net. The difference isn't whether or not they've got grandparents that can help them. The difference isn't all these other criteria. The difference is never had a union employee as a homeless shelter because they just don't need a homeless shelter.
Yep.
That I have had union retirement people before, and that's because the federal government let the corporation screw the workers on their contract
and steal their pension.
And so I had one guy who had a $2,780 a month pension, and the federal government allowed his corporation to give him 10%. So they were completely absolved of 90% of their obligation to his pension. Jeez. And he got $278 a month. And guess what? He ended up homeless.
That's criminal. Just criminal.
It is criminal.
And this is one of those things where, you know, you look at how much money and how much, you know, energy we put into allowing some of these organizations to say they're doing homelessness work and all this. And, you know, we could, as a matter of a national conscience, we could end this because some of the studies that I've seen say, you know, if we just gave people places to live, it'd be a hell of a lot cheaper than the hodgepodge of Band-Aid programs and feel good charities that are out there. If we really were committed to it, we could end it without all of the waste and all of the abuse and all the fraud that goes on in the current system. Or am I off base?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. And there are studies. Utah did a Housing First program. And the amount of one of the things that worked well for them was it was matched dollar for dollar by the Mormon Church. So an awful lot of money was kicked in by a private entity to offset the cost of prioritizing housing above all else. Once you get into housing, okay, if you need some other sort of help, then we'll help you afterwards. Of course, Housing First is the answer. But, you know, there are people who argue that it isn't, and that just the argument slows us down. And what I try to remind people of is every single person who thinks subsidies for housing to make housing more affordable are wrong should give up their mortgage tax credit. Because the mortgage tax credit is a housing subsidy for the middle and the upper class. And not the wealth class, but the middle and the upper middle class. That housing tax, that mortgage tax credit, which is just a pass through the banking industry, Think of the motivation that makes people like a mansion approve something like that. It's a pass through the banking industry. The banks get to lend you twice as much money on a house because you're going to deduct it from your taxes. So you're still a pass through. But of course, we don't want to take away your housing tax credit. But once you acknowledge the fact that you thought it was okay for you to get a break so you could get better housing, you should just move your brain to the next step, which is the poor who can't afford the house necessary to get that housing tax credit, which is a direct subsidy to you to buy your home or to pay your mortgage. And that tax credit right now, after the draconian cuts added by Trump to all the other cuts made in the last 40 years, that is twice right now the Section 8 budget, Section 8 and emergency housing budget. Twice as much money goes into middle class pockets so that they can lower the cost of their mortgage.
That's because they vote, ultimately. I mean, that's sadly what it is. But, you know, isn't this where Andrew
Yang's... I think it's because the bankers have dinner with the senators.
Sure, I mean...
Because that's who's getting the money. And if the banker wasn't making the money, trust me, all the voting middle class in the world wouldn't matter. And I think that's what Trump is trying to prove to us right now, and we really need to pay attention. Trump is trying to finally shine a spotlight on the fact that you're only the voter. You just don't matter.
Well, it's that old adage, if it really mattered, they wouldn't let you do it.
Right, right. And I think it's great that so many people are furious, but it's not surprising at all that none of them are in power.
Right. But right. Isn't this one of those moments where we decide that finally we're gonna take this over? And look, I don't know if you saw AOC's speech today on the floor, which I thought was fantastic.
But I love her.
Yeah, but you know, she went on basically what we're talking about, that you know, the Senate, you know, Mitch McConnell broke the Senate. There are thousands of people in Texas lined up in food lines, she said. He broke the Senate while people are no longer have beds in hospitals because they're sick. He sent the Senate home because their kids are going hungry, and you know, all down this list where there's at least a handful of voices that are raising the alarms, even if the leadership's not.
Oh, I love AOC, and I love, there are an awful lot of very strong Democrats speaking out right now, and I appreciate that. I'm a little left of most Democrats that I know. When people call me, say I like socialist ideals, I agree that I do, and so do they, because they support the military, which is the biggest socialist organization in the United States, probably in the world, because we have such a big military. You know, the common everyday person pays for something under the guise that it's for the good of the mass, or you know, of everybody as a whole. You know, I don't always need a common defense, but I'm willing to pay for it. Well, I don't always need a doctor, but I'm willing to pay for it for someone else. So if you can wrap your mind around our enormous military, then you should be able to wrap your mind around paying for health care or housing or any other or thing like that. So I do agree there are people making the call, but it is so disheartening. First of all, our U.S. senator system is stupid anyway. We should have proportional representation. But it's so disheartening that Lindsey Graham's going back. It's so disheartening that Mitch McConnell's going back. He did break the Senate. He did. And he broke the Senate, and he broke it for his own desires. And then when a man he absolutely abhorred became president, it only took him about three swallows to take it. He swallowed hard. But he took the fact that that man was going to be president, and then he just started his manipulation game all over again.
Yeah. So let me ask you, last line of questioning in this, because, you know, I think there are a lot of us who are saying, you know, what do we do about homelessness? How do we, you know, I've known people who are homeless. There's been a couple of moments where in my life where it was possible. How do we make sure that there's that safety net below people's feet? How do we move forward and end this?
Well, I think we have to, we can do anything. You know, there's absolutely no reason that the whole country couldn't just be paid to stay home right now. You know, stop bailing out these giant, how much of that money from the last stimulus program was just skimmed off the top for the big fat cats?
Yeah.
Prioritize the everyday person and the small businesses. Let the small business person pay their rent in the building that they're usually working out of, pay their employees. Let's prioritize the fact that people have to stay home with their kids because there is no daycare. Let's prioritize the needs of people, and then we've got plenty of money to pay for it. Then, oh, by the way, tax the rich. The 1% not paying taxes is the biggest comedy it's absolutely absurd. That and the people who think it's okay, they don't. Their siding is falling off of their mobile home. You know, their dad's going to get his foot cut off because he hasn't been able to afford his diabetes medicine. We've got people who are literally voting for a system that is killing them, and now with COVID, killing them faster. So, how do we remind people that it's like we're all in this what's the thing? We're in this bad relationship where we like. It's not that we like getting beaten up. We just don't know how to break the cycle,
right.
You know, and you think all the time, how do I talk that person out of leaving? Well, how do we talk the people in the United States out of leaving behind their abusers? How can anyone look at Mitch McConnell, 78 years old, and say, if that man had a healthy regard, respect, and affection for his grandchildren, he would retire and spend some time with them?
Or the people of Kentucky would throw him out. Which is what I was hoping, but didn't happen. But we're in this moment, and for me, I'm hoping the next administration helps move us in the right direction, and we've got lots of work to do. But, Pat, I appreciate the time and the thoughts and your passion. Keep it up. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff. I appreciate it. Our good friend Pat LaMarche. Quick break. Right